Get energized and excited to tell the world, hey, you can call me Catholic. Live from the Christ Cathedral Campus in Garden Grove, California, EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network and Orange County Catholic Radio present Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Whatever is true, whatever is honorable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is gracious, if there is any excellence and if there is anything worthy of praise, come on, we can always find something worthy of praise. Well, St. Paul says this is what we should be thinking about, filling our mind with all the good and noble stuff. And let's do more than think about it. Let's talk about it, too. That is certainly what we attempt to do on Call Me Catholic every week. I am Peggy Normandin, and you have arrived at Call Me Catholic, a light and lively hour of conversation intended to affirm, explore, and celebrate our Catholic identity in these modern times so we can wake up and say to the world each and every day, oh, yeah, you can call me Catholic. And you can call me blessed to have as my engineer-in-chief fact-checker, Jimmy G. Jimmy G, my co-pilot for 1 hour every Saturday. Greetings.
What a coincidence. This morning when I got up, I said, oh, yeah, you can call me Catholic. And I woke half
and somebody probably did. They said, you're Catholic.
They're like, it's that Jimmy G again.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, Jimmy G, tell our listeners another way that they can watch or hear the show.
Yes. Well, we have the Facebook live stream. So if you happen to have Facebook and if you, well, you have to, I think you have to like our page first. So make sure you've liked Call Me Catholic. But, yeah, Matt has our stream going right now where you can actually see the cameras pointing down into the studio.
Yeah,
so check it out.
Which it's very fun to watch. And you can see our guests in the studio and everything. Now, what you can't see from that view is the fact that Jimmy G and I are coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope on the crystalline Christ Cathedral campus in Orange mm-hmm. County. These 34 acres are command central for the Diocese of Orange, nestled in between Los Angeles and San Diego and Southern California, a very fine place to be. Now, this very Saturday, September 30th, we are also nestled in between two mighty feast days in our church that deserve a shout out. So yesterday was the feast day of the archangels, Michael and Gabriel and Raphael. Pope Francis recently called them in one of his talks our traveling companions.
Ah,
I love that. I love to think we have our angels walking alongside of us, especially the mighty Michael and Gabriel and Raphael. And then tomorrow, October 1st, is the feast day of another little powerhouse in our church, St. Therese of Lisieux, the little flower.
Right.
Who lived a cloistered life but left us with a whole library of inspirational stuff. She's responsible for a lot of conversions in our faith, and a lot of priests have great devotion to her. So we are in extraordinarily good company this week, sandwiched bookend between these two great saints. But we're going to have some great company in the studio with us as well. Our guest today is going to be Sister Nancy Michael Usselman. Sister Nancy is a member of the Daughters of St. Paul and as such is currently the director of the Pauline Center for Media Studies in Los Angeles, which is a center that develops and encourages media mindfulness in our faith formation. In other words, we can still find and cultivate our faith in this digital universe in which we live. She's been a great Catholic voice in the arts and media, and, you know, I love to talk about that stuff. So Sister Nancy Usselman coming up in a minute. And then in our final Chatting with Catholics segment, you're going to hear some little brief conversations I had with some women attending a parish guild luncheon. And I asked them whether or not they ever had a personal friend or family member that entered a religious order. Yeah, we weren't able to play it last week, so we're going to bring it back up this week. But first up, it's our Call Me Catholic countdown. And this week, since we are going to be talking about pop culture with Sister Nancy, I thought I would tap into that theme, kind of kick off the conversation with my top five things, wait for it, that modern culture has robbed, hijacked from our church. Might surprise you. So this is my list of top five things that modern culture, pop trends have lifted, pilfered from our church. So here we go.
The Call Me Catholic Countdown.
Yes, indeed. This is a very Call Me Catholic Countdown. Okay, so things that modern culture has hijacked from our church. Number five, bottom of the list would be fitness. Okay, now you hear the word fitness and you immediately think of gyms and diets and an exercise regimen, you know, right? Jimmy G's doing his little jogging in place right now as
I
speak.
During the show.
But guess what? We had that way ahead of our time. We covered fitness way ahead of our time. In the 16th century, St. Ignatius of Loyola developed a formula of meditation and prayer that is called the spiritual exercises.
Ah.
The Ignatian spiritual exercises, we were all about spiritual fitness, you know, long before people started really getting concerned about having the perfect dimensions on their body. We were in the throes of really trying to bring our soul into full fitness.
How many calories can you burn doing that?
Doing what? Praying?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think you burn any calories, but you earn points in
heaven. This is true.
Yeah.
This is true.
And so I think let's not completely ignore our body's fitness, but first and foremost, we should be spiritually fit. And they're very same regimens. You know, they require discipline, some dietary fasting, and a commitment to always improving. Okay. Number four, superheroes and superpowers. Okay. Very, very popular in the movies right now. Great theme in video games and stuff like that. And that's fun. We love to see our fictional superheroes rule the day. But a famous saint, we've got tons of them in our communion of saints. Tons of superheroes and superpowers. Mm-hmm. In the 20th century, just a recent one, St. Padre Pio, he had just about every superpower that you can ever think of. There are claims that he could bilocate, be in more than one place at one time, read people's minds, usually in the confessional. He was a priest. He could levitate. He could heal sick people. He said he could do three things at once. These were his words. He said, I can pray, confess, and go around the world at the same time.
Wow.
Does it?
Amazing.
I mean, what superpower could be better than
those,
that?
Those are
all
superpowers.
For good. All for good. Okay, wow. So we had superheroes covered long before Marvel Comics.
And he had a cool cape, too.
So. Yeah, he did. Yeah. So we need a big P on his chest, right, for Padre Pio. Okay, number three. Now, here's something that has always agitated me. We should really own the word awesome. Awesome shouldn't be something, a word used to describe pizza or a fast car or a great football move. Awesome belongs to God because there's a certain amount of fear in the word awesome. Mm. So it's been really watered down by pop culture. You know, that's awesome, dude. You know, the way you flipped your skateboard in the air. I mean, that's fun, but let's remember that original awesome belonged in our church.
Exactly.
Okay. Number two, now this one, you know, you saw this one coming, listeners. Angels. Okay. Pop culture has definitely hijacked our angels. You know, angels are not cute little dimpled ringlet, curled, hair-bobbed fairies that carry watering cans in our backyard.
Wait, they're not?
They are mighty messengers from heaven, and they have a very important job. They are spirits. They are not cute little figurines in a Disney movie, you know? So let's not forget, angels are powerful. Look at our archangels that we celebrated yesterday. I mean, they are, the name Michael means one that comes from God.
Right, right.
So, the little imagery of angels, that statuary and on Hallmark cards and all, is very cute, but let's not let that diminish our knowledge of what angels really are.
I know there's a network, Archangel Radio Network, too.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. One of our affiliates.
Right, right.
Yeah, shout out to them. Okay, now number one, going to take a deep breath here, Jimmy G, getting into something a little controversial, but this is what gave me an inspiration for this Call Me Catholic Countdown. The number one thing recent pop culture has hijacked from our church, taking a knee.
Oh.
Taking a knee. Hey, you know, long before Colin Kaepernick took a knee to disrespect the flag or to make a statement, we were genuflecting in our churches in front of the presence of God as a sign of humility, as a sign of respect and worship. So I don't like these big, bad football guys redefining what it means to take a knee, you know, in their statement. I just find that very offensive, and I find it sort of a ridiculous statement anyway that doesn't really belong in the football field.
I agree.
Now, you know, that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. We're going to see what Sister Nancy has to say about it. She's the director. Sister Nancy Usselman coming up next. She is the director of media studies in the Pauline Center in Los Angeles, and she will enlighten our discussion about finding faith in our modern culture. And since we're talking about pop culture, this would be a great time to share the good news that Life on the Rock, that very popular EWTN show, went off the air for a while. It's returning to EWTN TV and radio. Super popular program with a very young vibe, and it's back with a brand new look. The host is Father Mark and the Franciscan Friars of the Eternal Word, Mother Angelica's Order. Life on the Rock always features really cool guests, good, insightful conversation with the friars, music videos, very, very entertaining, and it's all about keeping Catholics engaged in the new evangelization wherever they are. Life on the Rock, it returns this Sunday and every Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern time, and then it encores again Thursdays at 5 p.m. Eastern. So put that back on your viewing calendar. Hey, Call Me Catholic is hip with the culture. We got a Facebook page, you know. Sure. Big deal, our Facebook page. Right, Jimmy G?
Right now it's trending. #CallMeCatholic.
Yeah, there you go. I like Peggy's you got the lingo down.
Peggy's talking about taking a knee.
It's very controversial for me, don't you think?
Oh, yeah.
And I was kind of
edgy.
I was very I withheld a lot of my emotion on that. So get on board and check out Facebook.com/callmecatholic. It is chock full of fun stuff from all the shows we've done. Jimmy G, how many shows do you think we've done with EWTN?
Oh, wow. Maybe...
I'm guessing about 80.
Yeah, close to 80.
Yeah, so yeah. The history is all there on our Facebook page, so give us a like. We'll be right back with Sister Nancy Esselman from the Daughters of St. Paul. I am Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Exploring the perils and blessings of embracing a Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Well, hello, everybody. So glad you are with us today. You all know how much I enjoy talking about the arts and movies and books and culture and stuff like that. And I'm always so grateful when I can find a guest who can come into the studio and elevate my knowledge and understanding of the good, the bad, and the ugly out there. And this guest makes a point, actually a profession, if you will, of seeking out the good and finding faith-filled ways to engage with pop culture and appreciate all the offerings of modern media. Sister Nancy Michael Esselman belongs to the Religious Order of the Daughters of St. Paul, a community known for its commitment to communicating the gospel within the media culture. In fact, Sister Nancy is the director of the Pauline Center for Media Studies in Los Angeles. In her 30 years as a Daughter of St. Paul, Sister Nancy has worked extensively in the creative aspects of social media development, advertising, radio and television production, marketing, retail management, and media administration. Wow. So you see, being a religious sister doesn't mean you're hanging out in church all day. Sister Nancy Esselman, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Thank you so much, Peggy. Appreciate it.
You're like the coolest nun ever.
Oh, well, we have a lot of fun with this, too.
You know, in fact, this is how hip Sister Nancy is. She has a hashtag. She belongs to a group that's hashtag media nun.
Yep, that's Ooh. All of it. And all of the Daughters of St. Paul, we use hashtag
all the
media
Daughters
nuns.
Of St. Paul. Oh, yeah. Cool. Yeah. So do you kind of circle back around and see what they're saying?
Oh, yes.
To you and about you and all
oh,
that?
Oh, yes. Everybody sees that because we all talk about it. Daughters of St. Paul in nationally, but also internationally, use that hashtag. So everything you can find
cool.
about the Daughters of St. Paul is on that hashtag.
Well, so first of all, tell us a little bit about your order and how you became so specialized in this little niche of modern life.
Well, we were founded over 100 years ago in northern Italy, and it's by a priest who is blessed in the church, Blessed James Alberione. And he saw really at the really beginning of the turn of the century, 1900 to 1901, that there was a need to preach the gospel, to really fight the bad press with the good press. That was his mantra. And understanding how the culture, the media can be a powerful tool for evangelization. And so he founded the Society of St. Paul, the priests and brothers, and then he founded the Daughters of St. Paul, our community of sisters, all completely involved in all areas of media evangelization. And of course, at that time, it was only the press.
I was going to say,
at the time,
he would have no idea
right.
how communication just exploded.
Right. So he died in 1971, so he's actually grew into bringing the Paulines through the radio and television, film, and now social media was just beginning, but he was always pushing us to say, take on the newest means possible, because this is where people will hear the word of God today.
Yeah, and that was Pope St. John Paul II
Absolutely.
Had that same idea, tap into everything.
Everything.
And another great example of that is Bishop Robert Barron.
Of course, yes.
I mean, he is everywhere.
Yeah, well, he's like a master theologian, being able to communicate the gospel really in a very tangible way for people today, you know?
And he was just, it was interesting, I watched his little video. He went and spoke to the people at Facebook.
That's right.
Which was very cool. He went up to Facebook for the day, and he just had a great talk. I listened to it. Did you happen
yes,
to catch
I
it?
Yes, I did.
It was very profound.
And did you see that also? He met a gentleman afterwards who was an atheist, who became Catholic, and who is now in the seminary for priesthood.
Are you kidding?
And he told him he became Catholic because of listening to his YouTube videos.
Oh, my God.
That's amazing. Wow.
That is. Well, we have to get him back on the show. He was here back in January. But, wow, I love those kinds of stories.
Yes.
So, Sister, you grew up a lover of movies and books and popular music and, of course, Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Did you ever think that you could combine all those passions into one vocation or profession?
No, I didn't. Actually, I never wanted to be a nun. Okay, just so you know that. That was never in my plan. But when I was at the end of high school is when I met the Daughters of St. Paul. And see, I'm from St. Louis, Missouri. It's like the Rome of the West. It's the Rome of the West. There are like over 200 religious mother houses there, you know. So, and my family knew at least 100 of them. I'm just kidding. But, you know, we knew everybody. The Carmelites, the Benedictines, the Missionaries of Charity, et cetera, et cetera.
So it was inevitable.
Right. Well, when we met the Daughters of St. Paul, I was like, okay, that could work because they do this media and movies, music and books to preach about Jesus. I said, I could do that.
Yeah. So you and, did see that in the order. You
saw, yeah. That was my first attraction was to the mission of the Paulines. But then it also attracted me, the whole spirituality, the way of living, the whole Christ, the way, the truth, and the life, to be able to preach it, just like the great apostle Paul preached to all of the people in the then known world. He would have been, our founder says, he would be at a microphone today. He would be on TV today preaching the gospel.
He'd have a Twitter account.
Right, absolutely. He'd be all over social media.
So and we're speaking, by the way, with Sister Nancy Usselman, who is the director of Pauline Center for Media Studies in Los Angeles. So she's right there in the thick of it. And if you'd like to join our conversation, maybe you have a comment about pop culture for Sister, or you have a movie you'd like to discuss with her, give us a call. The number is 714-282-6034. Marvelous Matt, we'll put you right through in our conversation. That's 714-282-6034. So, Sister, you have become well-known for having great, insightful opinions about cinema. Mm-hmm. That's many other things, but cinema in particular, and I know you love that.
Yes.
What's new? What's great? What's the hottest thing out there that we should be paying attention to?
Oh, my goodness. There are so many movies out there, but my favorite are the independent films and the foreign films. Yeah. And sometimes what Hollywood comes out with is really spectacular. Even the superhero movies may be like not always exactly what I'm looking for, but I got to say Wonder Woman was a little change in that superhero. I talk about it as a mysticism of heroism, but where it puts the human person above everything else, where we can then transcend ourselves. But with Wonder Woman, it brought it down to what the really core of a mysticism is. It's about giving of ourselves in love. And she recognized that it's truly love will change the world. Now, that's a change in superhero story. So yeah. I like that.
And it was
really
critically acclaimed. I mean, that was considered to be a very, very fine movie.
And it's not a fantastic, like, top-of-the-line movie. But I think out of the superhero movies, it was saying something deeper.
It had depth. Mm-hmm. But honestly, this last summer, there wasn't much
out
there. It was kind of a dearth. My husband and I would say, let's go to the movie this weekend, and we get out the paper or the list, and it's like, there's nothing.
There's all different kinds. There's so many different, and that's why I look out for the independent films. Yeah. There was one called A Quiet Passion about Emily Dickinson, the poet, which was a very interesting story, and, you know, very simple story. I think it was filmed in only like three sets, you know, but it was a very beautiful and poetic way of expressing her deep angst with humanity and her own self, her own humanity.
And that's challenging in a film to kind of show the interior.
Exactly.
You know, that takes real skill. I have heard something about this new documentary that's opening this week called Mully.
Yes.
And have you seen that?
Yes, I have.
Oh, lucky you.
Oh, it's an incredible story of a gentleman named Charles Mully in Kenya who literally grew up destitute in the slums of Kenya, where he was abandoned by his family at 6 years old, and he had to survive on his own. It tells the story. He kind of gets himself out of that destitution, and he works his way up, and he becomes a millionaire to where he owns like Western Kenya's oil and gas.
It sounds a little like Lion.
Oh, it's a rags to riches completely.
True story.
The incredible thing about this documentary, and it's a docudrama, but is that he actually gives it all up. And he has a family. He has a wife and 8 kids. But he goes to them and says, I had an experience, really an experience of God, where he had to say, I need to get rid of all of this because I need to help those children who are in the slums of Kenya. They're the orphans living on the streets. And he says, That's who we're taking into our own home. He's helped over 12,000 children. That's called the largest family in the world. He has about 12,000 kids.
Oh, but what a beautiful story.
It's a very beautiful story.
And he's alive today.
Yes, he is. Very much alive today, him and his wife, Esther. And talk about, you know, being foster parents. They were the best foster parents. They literally just gave these children love.
Yeah.
And because he says love will change the world. And I love, there's a great quote by Pope Pius XII. I don't know if you've heard of it, but he says, to live without risk is to risk not living.
Yeah.
And that's exactly exemplifies Charles Milley. And he did that. He risked everything. He risked all his money, all his businesses that he developed over years, gave his family, you know, nice home, a nice education, but they gave it up. He
and
gave
so
that
how
up.
How old is Milley today?
Oh, I think he's in his late 60s or 60s, so because him and his wife celebrated their 50th wedding anniversary.
And how did he care for these thousands of children? I mean, he can't bring them all into the same home, but
he did.
Wow. Whoa.
He did. And slowly as they grew up, they went off and helped them go off onto their
and
own.
And other ones would
and
come
then new
in.
Ones would come in. Yeah, thousands. They built a whole complex. And where they even created a whole little village area where it became its own little rainforest. It was literally desert. And he taught them how to build, to plant trees to where it became its own natural little ecosystem.
That is a great story. So it's called Milley. I had heard a little bit of buzz about it, but I have not had
yes,
an opportunity
to see it. Only being shown October 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And
across nationwide, though?
Nationwide, but you got to go Milley. On to MilleyMovie.com and see, put in your zip code, and you can see what theaters it's
okay.
showing in.
Okay, that's not, and if you miss those 3 days, then I'm sure it'll go immediately to DVD. It might get
right.
picked up by PBS.
Right, I would hope so.
Yeah, I love it when, see, there are such good stories out there that we don't have to keep recycling some of these sequel
right.
things. Sister, what are some of the movies that really influenced your love of cinema?
I gotta say, there's so many I can't even think of them all, but, one of them that really changed my whole view, and perspective of cinema is Shawshank Redemption. You know, that was such a powerful, when I first saw that, it really was transformative to me. Not only is it a raw and difficult story of a man falsely accused and is sent to prison for years, it's the power of forgiveness, the power of hope, because it's only what gives us, only what we could say is hope is gives us that desire to keep on living, to keep moving, to keep risking.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, you know what I love is that these movies are secular movies, but they contain themes that resonate with our Christian beliefs.
Exactly.
So much more powerfully than if you come out with a specifically identified Christian movie.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Because I think so much of the popular culture talks about really the deep needs and desires of humanity. Sometimes they're not so expressly put there, but if you look deeper, you could see what are we longing for? We're longing for connection, communion, intimacy, love, appreciation. That's there. It's there in the culture, and it's there in its cultural artifacts.
You know, sometimes it takes about 24 to 48 hours after I've seen a movie for me to know how it's impacted me. Some movies I walk away, oh, that was a great movie, but then it's gone. It's like the popcorn. I forget about it. Other movies, you walk away and it has this slow burn, and you're right, like a theme of honesty or a love or forgiveness just suddenly keeps kind of playing in your consciousness. And I think that is the brilliance of good art.
I think so, too. I don't know if you saw this movie recently. It was called, with Richard Gere, Norman.
No, I didn't
you know,
see that.
The inevitable rise, or the extraordinary rise in the inevitable fall of a New York fixer.
Okay.
It's such a long
that
title.
That never got on my radar. I don't know.
It's a tough one to say.
Okay, but the name is
Norman.
Easy. Norman. Okay.
Yeah, and it came out recently this year, and it's just... Boy, did that make me think, because it's really about this man who lives in New York. He just kind of exists by conning people to try to help them and get into their lives and really to say, I can help you. Let me help you into all this, the high elite in business elite there. And he's like not really doing anything, but it is,
it's like that Peter Sellers movie.
To me,
then.
It's a Richard Gere masterpiece. And you know, whether you like Richard Gere or not, He did a fabulous job on that.
So, I don't know that one. Is that recently out?
Yeah, it's out on DVD now. It was in the theaters. Yes.
I don't know. I think that somehow this last movie season, I didn't get it. I didn't get in the wavelength of it.
You mentioned Peter Sellers. Remember being there.
That's what I was thinking of. Yeah. Hey, Sister Nancy Esselman is going to stay with us so we can continue this really interesting and very relevant conversation about media and culture and how our faith fits into this context. So if you have a question or a comment for Sister Nancy about modern trends or social media, movies, art, culture, Sister Nancy can field it. She is the director of the Pauline Center for Media Studies in Los Angeles. So she's in the thick of it. So give us a call. Join the conversation. You will enjoy it, and we'll enjoy having you as part of it. The number is 714-282-6034. That's 714-282-6034. When we return, I also want to ask Sister Nancy about the Daughters of St. Paul Choir, which is coming out to the West Coast for the first time ever. Right, Sister?
That's correct.
Okay, that's going to be something you want to put on your Christmas radar, because that should be really cool. So lots more dialogue ahead. Stay with us. 714-282-6034 is the number. I am Peggy Normandin, and you're listening to Call Me Catholic on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Celebrating, exploring, and restoring our Catholic identity. This is Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin.
Hi, kids. Welcome back to Call Me Catholic. I am Peggy Normandin, and we are keeping it real today, taking on modern culture and seeing how we can continue to be engaging witnesses of our faith in light of contemporary trends. Our guest, Sister Nancy Esselman, is guiding us through this conversation. She is the director of the Pauline Center for Media Studies in Los Angeles, a sister in the religious order of the Daughters of St. Paul, but a very modern woman who is bright and informed and a great Catholic voice for the arts. Sister, I've heard you talk before about the fact that Catholics have a specific lens through which they kind of filter the world and filter culture. What is that? What influences that lens?
Well, that very specific Catholic lens is the sacramental view on the world. Because of our sense of the sacraments, the sacred that's present in the tangible and in the concrete, we call it sacramentality, because it's not only in the seven sacraments that we receive grace. Well, we receive actual grace. We receive gift of God himself. But we also experience grace within all the tangible things of the world, and also within art, such as in television and movies and fine arts. We can touch upon the beauty of God and the goodness of God in these sacramental moments that we experience, and because they also reach down deep into the existential desires of humanity, those desires for communion, connection, intimacy, those are very profound and very real and tangible experiences of human being.
You know, and I think it's interesting how cinematographers, scriptwriters, movie makers will tap into actual Catholic imagery to convey something. You know, if they want to have a powerful scene of birth, and they'll do a baptism. Or if they're going to portray a dramatic wedding, it's always in a church, and there's always a priest. How do you think that has changed, the way the world sees Catholics? So you just mentioned how Catholics see the world. How does the world see Catholics today, in your opinion?
I think, in one sense, it's a very secular world, so I don't think they necessarily look at Catholics anymore.
There you go.
Normally,
well said.
But I think there is something that we can say, and I think there are many, even people in the culture, the creators of culture, like filmmakers and television creators. I think that they're showing a little bit more of this. Not preaching, but they want to show really good stories. They want to give really good stories that inspire, that bring out something deep in the human person. And not all of them, of course, there's some that are just not worthy of watching, but then some are that really speak deep to that, that need and that culture.
You know, the Paulist brothers, and I know that you're not related to the Paulist brothers other than having the same patron, but they used to have a very cool television series called Insight. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
And they would create little dramas every week that sort of pointed to, a sort of moral struggle.
That's
and they didn't always resolve them for you, but they let you think about them, and actors were drawn to that.
Right, It's good because they're really good stories.
Yeah.
Not everyone nobody wants to be preached to. People
right.
want to just hear a really good story, and that's what inspires. That's what gets us to think, to contemplate, to reflect. And that's really what it means to be a cultural mystic today.
Mm-hmm.
To be really in the culture, a cultural mystic. Yeah, I'm writing a book about that.
Oh, wow. Come back and talk to us about that. I love it. That's fascinating.
Yeah, see, it's really seeing the grace present in the culture today, but also how then we can dialogue with the culture
yeah.
and bring our virtues and our understanding of our Catholic faith into dialogue with it.
Yeah.
And
we're going to dialogue right now with Jean from Cleveland, Ohio, who called in with a question for you. Hey, Jean, welcome to Call Me Catholic.
Yes, thank you so much for taking my call, Peggy and sister. First of all, there are two movies that I enjoy, and I'm not much of a moviegoer, but there are two movies that I saw that were, I thought, very good in different ways. One of them was The King's Speech.
Oh,
yes.
Outstanding.
Yes, it is.
The other one was called Florence Foster Jenkins.
Oh, yes.
Meryl Streep.
She thought herself an opera singer. She really wasn't, and it was funny listening to her, but it was kind of sad in a way. But some very beautiful moments. It was sad because she was treated with mercury, which distorts the hearing.
Right.
But the thing that I found interesting was that I didn't realize how close she was to living in World War II, and she actually entertained soldiers, and you can put entertain in quotes, and a lot of them laughed at her, and one mm-hmm. of the other people who laughed at her said, now, wait a minute, she's doing this for you.
Right.
And I think in terms of World War II, you know, there was so many heaviness, I'm sure, if nothing else, she created
a little levity.
Some brevity.
Yes.
That was Richard Gere, too, wasn't it?
Yes.
Meryl Streep, that was.
Meryl Streep. Meryl Streep, yes.
And I can't remember. I thought Richard Gere was the man that married her. No? Oh, well.
I don't know who it was, but the guy that played her accompanist, her accompanist's name was Edward McMoon.
Okay.
And there was a scene in there in which she had wanted to be a concert pianist, but somehow she hurt her left hand.
Right.
So she's playing the piano with her right hand, and her accompanist behind her is playing the left hand, and it's one of the Chopin preludes.
Oh,
and
right.
Most of the theaters now have earphones where you can listen to the descriptive videos if you're blind.
Right.
And it was the way they described it was so moving.
Right.
Well, that obviously made an impact on you. What was the takeaway for you, Jean? Compassion?
I think so. Compassion.
And a person's story.
Yes.
Don't take them for granted.
The point of struggle.
It was kind of sad in a way, you know, when you think that her hearing was so distorted, but at the end, whoever was singing for her, they showed, you know, you kind of thought, like, in her mind, what she thought, you know, she sounded like.
Right.
And at first, you're kind of struck by, boy, how can all these people? I mean, she paid her voice teacher off.
Yeah. Right.
How wonderful she was.
Yeah.
But,
well, thank you, Jean. That obviously made an impression on you, and I'm sure it was a popular movie, and Meryl Streep always does an incredible job of delivering
yes.
a role.
And there's always a depth to the story. You know, both of those movies you mentioned have great depth to them. If you look even deeper at what is really going on in that story, that's the question of media mindfulness, is what's really going on here? What is it really saying? And is it according to my values or not? You know, and you can always find something that has, you know, that can speak to you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for that contribution to our conversation, Jean.
Thank you, Jean.
You're welcome.
God bless you. What are some of the dangerous pop culture trends out there right now, sister?
I think there is a lot that's trying to push us into a nihilistic view of life. It comes out in many things, you know,
like there's dystopian.
Yeah, dystopian. But I mean, the dystopian also has some points of hope in them. So many dystopian stories have that there's that human beings can rise above even the dystopian culture we create. But, I think there's sometimes it's out there is this very nihilistic and it kind of like, there's nothing to live for.
Yeah.
You know, you live without any hope, without any desire for something beyond this world, it's kind of depressing, yeah. And it kind of can stay there. And there are some stories that stay there. And I, a lot of people talk about Game of Thrones, and I've only seen a few. And I know it's been a struggle because there's such explicit sex and, you know, violence in this. And a lot of people don't want to watch it, and because of that. And I agree. It is pretty tough to watch. But I think in its underlying, there is some really good story that it's trying to get to, mm-hmm. about this struggle for, you know, properties and, you know, peoples and
power,
you know. And but I think sometimes there can be a very nihilistic perspective of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't lead to anything. It's not fulfilling to the human person. It's actually destructive to the human person.
What do you think of video games? I mean, video mm-hmm. games are certainly part of modern culture.
Right. Oh, definitely. So many people will say, oh, it's very isolating. You know, video games become very, very, very isolating. It takes people away from real life interactions with others. And that can be too much of a generalization because actually on video games, people create communities online. I mean, you're creating guilds. You're creating little, communities where you can converse about different things. Mm-hmm. Even in between playing the game, people are conversing about different things of life. So, you can't make it a blanket that it's like, oh, it's isolating, it's bad. But I think it depends upon the type of game played. You know, when it comes to strategy and trying to figure out, you know, strategies of how to grow and how to, you know, reach their goals. And that's one thing. It's another thing where it just becomes blowing people up and very destructive.
And this, you know? And the way you've described that kind of helps me understand more of what you mean by media mindfulness.
Yes, exactly.
Be aware of the influences.
I think that's it. It's about asking questions. It's mm-hmm. about being aware of what is happening and what the culture is saying in these, artifacts. You know, what is it saying to us? And I think it's about asking questions and especially teaching the young mm-hmm. to ask these questions. What is it really saying to us? And what is really going on? I mean, who created this message, first of all? Because, you know, it's often created by, you know, media people money.
That have an agenda. Yeah,
yeah, have an agenda. And then what does it say about what do I take away from it?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the most important question to ask. What is it going to do for me? What do I take away
and
from this experience?
And if it's taking you to a dark place,
exactly.
Stay away. Don't go back.
Exactly.
I mean, it's compelling, but don't go there.
It makes you make that choice because then you have to make your own media choices. No one could do that for you.
Sister, I love the fact that you mentioned earlier that you do a sort of retreats based yes. on cinema and film,
right?
Which I think is very cool. How does
we call it Cinema Divina? And what it is, it's taking Lexio Divina, you know, where you're praying with the scriptures, uh-huh. but we do it with film, Cinema Divina, and we pray with the film and scripture together. So we watch it, read the scripture, and then we reflect on it together afterwards as a group. And I actually done national film retreats and local film retreats for this, as well as parish missions to be able to do this. We've done one with the Way with Martin Sheen.
Yeah.
We've actually taken people on a virtual pilgrimage
wow.
through a whole understanding of that film.
There was a lot to talk
on the
about
Camino.
On that movie. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
You know what fascinates me is that this movie comes out and now everybody knows what the Camino is, what
yes,
the way
exactly.
is. Yes,
exactly.
I think it upped the pilgrimage.
It probably
there,
did.
Don't you think, sister?
I think it did.
I think that is so cool that you are reaching people. You're using cinema and books and culture as talking points.
Mm-hmm.
I love that. And I love your kind of fresh, healthy perspective on it, which says to me you feel empowered by it. You know,
yes.
you're not a victim of it. You're not like getting sucked into it. You're
right.
you're in control of it.
We have to be. We have to be the ones in the control seat to know and decide what we want to see mm-hmm. and watch and hear and listen to. You know, it has to be us making those decisions, each person. And that's where it takes a little practice to get into that mindfulness mode.
Yeah. Now, sister, you said listen, which reminds me that you are very excited about this Daughters of St. Paul choir.
Oh.
Now, tell me why this choir is so exciting.
Well, because I've been part of it for 22 years.
Have a few bars.
Yeah.
See if we can sing along.
No, well, you know, when we started, I got to tell you, 22 years ago, we started singing and doing Christmas concerts on the East Coast. And we would stand there with our books, you know, like a choir and sing with those, you know. Finally, slowly over the years, we changed. We got individual mics. We started moving. We're dancing. We're,
now, I'm looking
we're
at
all
a little
over
picture.
The stage.
You have sparkles on.
Oh, we have sparkle. We do our costume changes. We put on a sparkly red scarf. Woo!
Oh, no. But
you know, it's a lot of fun and it's become a really a tradition for those who have seen it, but for the first time, we're moving it out to New Orleans as well as to L.A., Los Angeles, for the first time ever. And, you know, it's really an experience of joy and love of what is the true meaning of Christmas. But you know, it's the sisters, we have so much fun doing this mm-hmm. that joy just exudes out to the audience, and we interact with the audience all through the concert. It's a lot of fun. So we say, oh, the little kids, the babies from the 9 to the 90 year olds all love this concert, because it's really just an experience of joy.
Joy.
And all we could say is that, you know, we are who we are. We're sisters. We love God. We love what we're doing.
You wear your habits.
We wear our habits, and we're happy doing this. And it's just grown over the years to where we're to sell out crowds, you know, of 1,000+ anywhere, any city we go to. So it's a whole tour starting on November 29th in New Jersey and coming all the way across.
So if you want to find out if it's in your area, you can go to pauline.org.
You can go to daughtersofstpaulchoir.org.
Okay.
daughtersofstpaulchoir.org.
We'll put that on our Facebook.
You can get the whole thing. You can see the whole tour.
What a fun family thing to do. What's your very favorite Christmas hymn? Christmas song.
Joy to the World. You know why? Yeah. Because I always listened to Mahalia Jackson singing it. My dad had a record, okay, you know, a turntable.
Yeah, put the little
playing
handle down.
Mahalia Jackson singing Joy to the World. Ooh. It's always been my favorite song ever
that
since.
That has to be a powerful rendition.
It is.
Yeah.
It's total gospel.
I love Joy to the World because I can harmonize with that one. And we shouldn't try that, but I always will sing the harmony to it when we sing it during Christmas time. That happens to be one of my favorites,
is
too.
That right?
Do you sing any secular songs?
We do. We, you know, we throw in Rockin' okay. Around the Christmas Tree.
Oh,
we do Jingle Bells and the kids love it. You know, we do interesting renditions. We do traditional Christmas songs, Oh Holy Night, Joy to the World. But then we also throw in some new contemporary songs. One we're singing this year is from Ariana Grande's Love is Everything.
Love.
And it's a wonderful little song.
Well, great. Okay. Well, I hope they're all sold out for you, sister, because the Rockettes have nothing on these sisters, or vice versa. I don't know. Sister, tell us a little bit here as we wrap up our great discussion, what the Pauline Center for Media Studies does in Los Angeles, what it offers.
Sure, we teach a lot from there, and we go out to teach on what a media literacy from a faith perspective. So it's really this sense of media mindfulness, but we also teach a theology of popular culture, a history of church in media, prayer and media. So we do these cinema divinas, film retreats. So it's not that we do everything from that center there, but we also reach out and go to travel to different parishes, schools, and conventions to be able to give these talks and presentations and retreats.
I think this would be great in high schools.
Yeah.
I was sharing with you before the show that my sons loved their cinema class during high school, that they actually took at a junior college. And it's just great opportunity for discussion.
Yes, it is.
It's really a great way to...
Because you talk about media, the something that especially teenagers and understand and know it's part of their life at the moment. Oh, you
and
got
it's a great way to get to faith.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's kind of wraps back around to faith.
Exactly.
So, sister, also tell us about your book that's coming out, and when can we look forward to it?
Well, I hope it's going to be coming out through Wiffenstock Publishing, and it's called, hopefully this is a tentative title. It's called A Sacred Look, Becoming Cultural Mystics. It's really a theology of popular culture.
I love that. I love that. Now, you know, sister, every week EW10 gives me a subject to highlight midway through the end of the show. And I think it's brilliant that today's product is Amazon Echo. Right. So Amazon Echo is a little high-tech device you buy from your technology store, and it enables you to just speak your commands and Amazon Echo responds, and there's a little virtual person inside there like Siri. It's not Siri, it's Alexa. Yeah, Alexa. See, she knows. She's all over this.
Echo.
And so you set it up in your home, you connect it to your internet. It's a little tower that sits on the counter, and then you can just say, "Alexa, play EWTN radio," and boom, you're listening to Call Me Catholic on Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern. They know us, Jimmy G.
Who knew?
Alexa knows us.
There you go.
It's a pretty cool device, and it's just one more way to access all the great, excellent programming on EWTN Radio while you're going about your household routine. Check out the Amazon Echo today. So you see, sister, EWTN is all over the social media stuff.
I know you are, and that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's great. Well, we have just loved having you with us today. Any more recommendations for popular culture that we should be seeking out right now?
Oh, my
Parting
goodness.
Shots.
Oh, boy.
Music. Where's
Well, music.
Well, we've got the choir cover, Christmas choir.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Andy Grammer. I don't know if you all heard of his songs, but you know, he's so popular, but you know, I think he doesn't get enough credit, but he has this wonderful song called Give Love.
Okay.
If you get a chance, listen to it. Give Love.
Two words, simple. Give. You can't argue with that.
No, you can't argue with that because we desperately need that in the world today, right?
We do. But I love your message of being mindful. Let's stay mindful of the culture around us and also tap into your patron, St. Paul's idea of look for the good, look for the beautiful, look for the noble and the truthful and the knowledge. And talk about it.
That's what makes us happy, you know, when we look at the positive and the beautiful in life. Yes, there is always the negative and there's the evil present in the world. We won't deny that. But I think it's always when we can look at the good and find what's good and see the beauty in the stories and the human stories of today, that's what gives us hope.
We are being Jesus to the world. Sister Nancy, I really hope you'll return to Call Me Catholic and continue to enlighten and uplift our hearts and our minds toward finding the good, the noble, the worthy. Thank you for your ministry. Thank you for being available today and for your presence in our studio. God bless you and keep doing the good stuff. God,
thank you so much, Peggy and Tim. I appreciate it.
We want her back, don't we, Jimmy G?
You better believe it. This has been great.
Okay, now to wrap up the show, we're going to play you a little Chatting with Catholics segment. You know, that's when I take my microphone out into the Catholic community and I ask everybody the same question. So this occasion, I was going to a ladies' luncheon, all women belonging to a parish guild here in the Diocese of Orange. And I just was very conversationally going around saying, hey, ladies, have you ever had a personal friend or a family member join a religious order? And here's what they had to say.
Call me Catholic. We're chatting with Catholics.
I am about to walk into the fall luncheon for the St. John Vianney Chapel Ladies Guild. And I thought I'd ask these fine Catholic women, how many of them know someone personally who has entered a religious order? Maybe a family member or a friend. Just take a casual poll. Let's see what they have to say. So I'm asking people if they have ever had a friend or a family member enter a religious order.
I haven't, but my father had his best friend in high school, and then another good friend of his in college. Both became wonderful priests, and they would visit us at times separately, but we grew up knowing a lot about Father Bill and then Father McNulty.
And how nice for them to have a family that felt like home, that they could come and visit and, you know, feel comfortable.
Yes, it was. It was nice. And Father Bill was just a real character. And it was.
But that's interesting that your dad had two very close friends go into the priesthood, but he himself did not, which is why you're here.
Yes, it was a good thing he did not go into the priesthood.
Well, it's one branch of our family that had a couple of, I think they were Jesuits. And they were the Flynn part of the family. But they're all gone now. They've all gone.
That's right. They're up in their heavenly home. They've earned that reward.
Definitely.
Have you ever had a friend or family member enter a religious order?
My husband's cousin entered a religious order and then left.
She left. Okay. And she's at peace with that, and so is the family?
She is. She actually married a brother who also left the religious order. They met
while they were both. Scandalous.
Yeah, very.
Well, that does happen sometimes. You know, you think you discern your vocation incorrectly, but I'm sure it all contributed towards her faith in the end.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, we do have a friend that went into the Carmelites, and we know that the parish actually helped her out with her student loan so she could get into.
That's nice. And then she prays for the parish in return when she gets into the order.
I'm not sure, probably.
Well, we better be counting on that. Have you ever had a family member or a friend enter a religious order?
No, I have not.
Inconceivable!
But I certainly respect people that do.
Have you ever had a friend or family member that you know of enter a religious order?
Yes. Well, my mother's aunt, Aunt Aurelia, was the principal of the school in Kamloops in Canada. But she did make a big difference in my mother and my mother's sister because it was a boarding school. And my mother has learned so much in that boarding school, and which was conveyed to us as children, and how my mother...
So it was impactful.
Yes, definitely.
Sister Aurelia.
Sister Aurelia.
Okay, God rest her soul. Have you ever had a friend or a family member enter a religious order?
Well, yes. My mother's older sister was a Dominican nun, and my nephew is a priest for the Diocese of Orange.
So those are huge influences in your life, I'm sure.
Of course. My mother's faith was what really influenced me.
Well, was your mother able to stay in touch with her sister after she entered the convent?
Oh, sure. But my mother died when she was only 42. So I became the next of kin for my aunt, the Dominican nun.
You're very comfortable with priests and sisters.
I am. I also grew up in Sierra Madre in the shadow of the Passionist Fathers Retreat House. That was where we played. We literally played.
Holy Playground.
Holy Playground, right.
That is very cool, though. Have you ever had a friend or family member enter a religious order?
I have a dear friend who, at the age of 56, decided to enter the Norbertine Canonesses, and she's up there right now.
What is her sister name now?
Sister Bernard.
Is it hard not to call her by her familiar name that you grew up knowing her by?
Well, I call her by her familiar name. And
is that okay?
Well, I don't see her because she's cloistered, okay. So she doesn't know about it. And if you tell her, I'll
your secret is safe with me.
The other thing is that my daughter has researched our family way back into earlier centuries in Europe, and she's found a lot of saints.
Well, it's good to have saints in the family.
It is good.
Are you on your way toward that path?
I think I'm there already.
Oh, good for you.
Humility, we love it. Have you ever had a friend or a family member enter a religious order?
No, not personally, but my older sister years ago was dating several fellows, and she sent three of them to the Jesuits.
Wow, I think they've got a name for that in the seminary. Well, ended on a high note there, Jimmy G. Have you ever had a friend or family member enter the religious order?
Actually, yes. I do have a first cousin who became a nun.
Yeah. It used to be that every family had a member that, you know, that took one for the team.
Seems,
you know,
like it, yeah.
And that's why, you know, they had big families and it was a beautiful thing. But look at St. Teresa's family, whose feast day is tomorrow. St. Teresa of Lisieux, pray for us. She and four of them, I think all five girls went into the Carmelite cloister.
Well, and last week's program was case in point, the couple who we had in and three of their daughters.
Yeah, three of their
amazing
daughters had joined the religious order. Did you ever consider joining an order yourself?
You know what? When I was young, yeah, I did contemplate it for a while.
And for us, I grew up being taught by the Sisters of St. Joseph of Carondelet. In fact, I love telling the story of how they taught me all the way through grammar school. And then when I went off to high school was the year that they lost their habits, so to speak. They went from the long, dark, swinging robes and the white bibs around their face to free dress, as we called it.
Wow.
And that was pretty stunning. But yeah, I mean, their life is always so fascinating, and they're usually such joyful women that it's very compelling. It's really, I think everybody should think about it.
Were you in that place at one point where you thought about it?
I certainly was drawn to the sisters that I knew, and I loved them, and I thought their life looked fascinating, but I don't think I ever considered it for a long period of time, but I certainly had great affection for the nuns and all that stuff. So, yeah. Hey, listen, don't forget to check out our Facebook page, friends. It's facebook.com/callmecatholic. We'll list some of the websites that we mentioned today in our conversation with Sister Nancy, but I'll remind you that if you want to find out if the choir is coming to your town for Christmas, go to Daughters of St. Paul Choir.org, and it is Saint is spelled S-T, not S-A-I-N-T. So Daughters of St. Paul Choir.org. And we certainly did enjoy our conversation with Sister Nancy. What a fun guest she was.
It has been a blast today.
Yeah,
as always.
Great. So we want to remind you to go to our Facebook page and check out all our offerings there. But mostly, we want you to come back and join us again next week. Same day, same time for more good news from our good faith. Until then, I'm Peggy Normandin, but you can, you know, call me Catholic.
You've been listening to Call Me Catholic with Peggy Normandin, live from the Christ Cathedral campus in Garden Grove, California. Call Me Catholic is a co-production of EWTN Radio and Orange County Catholic Radio. Heard weekly on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.